Hello, everyone, and welcome to the first episode of Discussing Politics with Political Science Students and Professors. I'm Thomas Gibbons, Editor-in-Chief of the Dominican Star. And the first episode today, I have on Tony Sandifer, a political science major at Dominican. Tony, how you doing today?
I'm doing pretty well. Cannot complain. You know, it's an interesting political climate with the world pandemic, a global pandemic going on, and a bunch of other issues that have been highlighted in 2020. So I'm really excited to talk about this election because compared to, I'm pretty sure, a lot of other elections, this one has been very unique and has a lot of things riding on it.
Absolutely. Just another brief introduction to the show. I'm grateful that Tony is my first guest on the show today. And then the next coming days and weeks, I'll have multiple political science majors on and hopefully some professors as well to talk about things they've been working on in class, their opinions of the election, and just their overall takeaways in general. So, Tony, my first question for you is, what was your biggest surprise on election night and the days that followed?
My biggest surprise was just seeing how much the mail-in vote mattered. I mean, going into election night, I predicted a Biden victory, and I knew it was going to be whatever we saw on election night was going to be far to the right of far Trump favoring compared to what the final results were going to be, because of the pandemic, there was a lot more mail-in voting. But I was just surprised over how huge the percentage margins were that mail-in voting and just overall counting the in-person votes took longer than expected. But then the mail-in votes just had such a huge impact flipping the entire that sort of Midwestern region. You got Pennsylvania, Wisconsin, and Michigan. And those were the three key states I was paying attention to. And just to see, like, election night, a lot of people, I was in a Zoom call with a few other political science majors and professors, and a lot of people were just like, yeah, nah, Trump's going to win this. But I was like, I was thinking the mail-in vote was going to bring it closer, but I didn't know it was going to bring it, like, as close as it did. Like, I kind of thought that maybe Biden wasn't going to get Pennsylvania, that he could have won with maybe like Nevada and Arizona and stuff like that. I really didn't think he was going to be able to flip Pennsylvania, but long behold, he was able to. And then just the whole, it was a very, very tense time because a lot of people had a lot of emotions riding on the election, which I completely understand. So I was just excited. I mean, even though it was a very tense time, I don't know if that's ironic or something. Being a political science student, I was like very engaged in like, this was almost like my Super Bowl. If I was like a sports person, like this would have been like the equivalent to my Super Bowl, right?
Right.
So yeah.
But no, that's, you brought up some good points. Especially, I want to go circle back to the mail-in ballots. You saw two different approaches with that in the Trump campaign and the Biden campaign. Obviously, Biden was more of, you know, stay home, stay safe. You can mail in your ballot to make sure that your voice is heard. Where Trump, on the other hand, was all about, you know, saying that there's fraud in the system. There's a problem with mail-in ballot. If you're going to do a mail-in, get an absentee. Otherwise, show up at the polling place. So when you look at it in the broader things, there, you know, it shouldn't be that big of a surprise, really, that there'd be more mail-in votes toward Biden because that was a bigger preach to his supporters.
Exactly. And my thing was that before the election, before votes were even cast, once mail-in voting and early voting started, Trump instantly started saying things because, I mean, people who were studying how or trying to analyze, get an idea of how voter turnout would come out, particularly when you're seeing Trump hold these huge rallies, a lot of people were under the idea that Trump would do better with just purely the in-person vote, which was true because with just the in-person vote, Trump was doing amazing with just the in-person vote. But what you got to realize is that, I mean, you understand this. What I'm saying is some people didn't realize how much mail-in voting would matter, because people think that mail-in voting has not historically been this big, but a lot of people don't realize that. I think it was like around 1 in 4. Don't quote me on it, but there was a lot of mail-in votes in 2016. So mail-in voting having always has millions of votes. People just assume that because it's a lot more, it'd be more fraud and other things like that. I mean, it was definitely going to take longer to get counted, of course, because not only was this one of the biggest voter, it was in, this was the big biggest turnout in US history. So people were thinking that, okay, a lot more people are going to vote. So that means it's a lot more easier for things to get messed up, which, in my honest opinion, are there fraud votes? Of course there are. Like in every election, there are fraud votes. But the thing that the Trump campaign had to have done by now is had multiple pieces of evidence, because you can prove voter fraud. You can prove that. Like you prove a few cases of that. But what that does not mean, okay, we're just going to give the election to Trump. What has to happen is that you have to prove that there was a significant enough amount of mail-in voting fraud, or just voting fraud in general, that would overturn the election results, which we're not going to see. That has not happened. And even with the recounts have not had such huge marginal effects. They mainly only change a few hundred votes. So I guess that was kind of sidetracking to the whole idea of voter fraud, because I know that that's like the main fear that people had with mail-in voting. But I mean, it's a pandemic. You like it's you have to expect that people are gonna put their own safety first rather than risking going out to polling places. Which, when I did go to vote, I did go vote in person, and it was socially distanced, and I really liked that. But that's mainly because we live in the state of Illinois, and Illinois has been for the past few elections very left leaning, like towards more in the presidential level, more towards Democratic candidate. So it's not nearly as much emphasis on a state like Illinois compared to like a Pennsylvania or a Florida, where it's a lot, not only is there a lot more voters, there's a lot more like things contingent. Like those states can really go either way. So I feel like Trump's try to like spin some sort of misinformation to try to, because he had an idea of what was going to happen. And what he had an idea of happening is exactly what happened. On election day, without the mail-in votes, he was going to win. But then once more votes started getting counted, like the mail-in votes, he lost. So it was trying to sow those seeds so that way he could try to maybe grapple on to something after he lost. But I mean, as we're seeing, like his cases are getting turned out, I mean, thrown out. And honestly, it's just he's trying to reach on to something that isn't there.
Your point that every election there is fraud votes. I 100% agree with that point. There's never going to be a perfect system. It's hard to be perfect in anything. So you're right there. There is, a chance of fraud votes. And then especially if we go to the states that you said you watch closely, and you watch Michigan, Wisconsin, Pennsylvania pretty closely, and as referred to, it is known. It can be called the blue wall, right? It's what usually what the Democrats pick up, and it's what Trump interrupted in 2016, taking Wisconsin and taking Michigan, and that's what really that was a big part of winning in 16 is surprising a lot of people there. And so then if we focus on those two states here, Michigan and Pennsylvania, that's where there's an abundance of mail-in votes, and the Trump campaign has put in their things to the court. They've taken a lot of statements from people. They have, signed affidavits from a lot of people trying to prove that, the election was stolen from them. What I know you touched on a little bit, but what would your statement be in terms of the Trump campaign saying that this election was stolen from them?
Well, I mean, when you're seeing Republican figures beginning to concede and realize that this is probably not going in Donald Trump's favor, it seems as if this is just some sort of ploy to try to maintain some sort of the base that he has for a potential run in 2024. So if, let's say, Biden screws up really bad, he can go in that primary and be like, look, y'all should have voted for me, and I said this voting was rigged or something or whatever, trying to make sense and try to make his image not look as bad, try to fix that tarnished image. Because I mean, the Trump presidency as a whole has not been the best in terms of public image wise. I mean, popular, like, he never had the popular vote. In 2016, he didn't get it, and not only that, I mean, because of that, there was a lot of polls that indicated that his approval rating has never been significantly high. So I mean, he's has not been a overly favorable president. So I feel like this is him trying to reconcile with his fan base that is there of voters that he wants to try to still be there for a potential run in 2024. But I mean, not only that, I think this is him trying to deal or cope like with the idea of losing, because in this entire in Donald Trump's personality is seldom, or I mean, personally, I've never seen him admit to a loss or something. Like, Donald Trump is not that type of person to accept a loss easily. That's not who he is. So this is him trying to avoid the fact that, number one, he lost, and number two, trying to 'cause he likes his fan base. Like, he like when you see in his rallies, he loves just hearing the crowd cheer for him. In the State of the Union addresses, he'll just say a line and then just get appraised. Like, he loves that appraisal. So this is him trying to maintain that, regardless of the fact that he knows he's not going to be in the White House. Or, well, to him, he probably doesn't think that. But I don't know. I mean, this is kind of like, I don't know if you want to stay like a state of grief, like denial, because like that's not really funny, but like it's like comparing this to like when you're grieving or something, the first stage is always going to be denial, and that's exactly what we're seeing. And then I think we might go to a anger point at something, and then so I honestly think what we're going to see, this is not even based off of any political knowledge or anything. This is just based off my own personal ideas that maybe we're going to see different stages of grief within the coming months before he's ultimately leaves office in January.
There is a huge fan base for him. There's no doubt about that. The rallies in Pennsylvania leading up to the election, Wisconsin, North Carolina, Florida. He has had a lot of people come out for him, and those people are still standing with him. But in the past few days, we have seen there's been a lot of reports, as there has been the past few weeks. But I'm still waiting for any sort of, really circumstantial evidence. There's been a lot of affidavits. The press secretary, Kayleigh McEnany, has had a
Exactly.
lot of affidavits, but there has to be this overwhelming substantial evidence, and Trump supporters are still holding on to that it could possibly come. I know Trump's personal lawyer, Rudy Giuliani, said the other day that he has enough votes. He has found enough of fraud to overturn some states. But, it is still just all talk, and we are still waiting for any sort of, circumstantial evidence.
Again, this is like the stages of grief. One, denial, literally not even having any evidence, just not trying to accept an idea that you have just lost. Like, it's before, like, the fact that one of the things that made me really feel that Biden was going to win is that Trump was making statements about not really liking the election results or not trusting the election results without the election even happened yet. Like, back in August, I think once early voting or mail-in voting started to happen, he would just instantly was like, there's gonna probably be fraud in this election. It's probably gonna be the most fraudulent election. He hasn't even seen the results yet, but yet he's already calling it. So I think that Trump had to plan this out, because I feel like he knew on the inside that he was probably not going to win with the influx of mail-in votes. And I mean, the pandemic, number one, is like, I honestly feel that regardless of who is president, even if Hillary Clinton was president right now, I do not think she would be winning a re-election having to deal with the pandemic, because that's such a hard thing for president to deal with. Like, the whole world, I mean, the whole country is going to be looking at the president, and when Donald Trump has not said the most appealing things, like, when he hasn't really been, like, we didn't really see him openly, like, say masks are acceptable. I mean, he's mentioned how wear a mask, but we haven't seen him really push that until towards the end of the campaign, after he was diagnosed, and after, like, once it started getting closer to election day, then we started to see him, like, actually wear a mask. Like, I remember at the first debate when his wife came up, she wasn't wearing a mask, but then at the last debate, she comes up there with a mask on. This is after Trump's diagnosis and both of their diagnoses. So, I mean, Trump really is, I do not think, is going to fully accept the election results. He'll probably be like, you know what? It is. He probably might be like, okay, you know what? I'm leaving, but this was not right. This is voter fraud. This is going to go down in history as the most rigged election or something. Like, he even said that in 2016. Like, I remember him even talking about how the 2016 election could have been rigged. Like, this has been something he's always said when there was a possibility that he could remotely lose to some extent. So, yeah, I don't think Trump's going to completely reconcile, because that's, like I said, that's not who he is. He's not the type of person to concede. He's the type of person to always try to stay in the limelight or whatever. So being in, like, on the public stage and trying to accept a loss when he's been in the public eye for years, for a long time. I mean, generations have known who he is. And to him being on the presidential level, seeing that he just lost, in addition with having to essentially, like, I feel like once the pandemic hit, it was kind of an idea that he's probably was not going to do too well in the election. And so having that build up and then just having to accept the fact that he lost, I don't think he's going to do it.
No, Tony, I agree with you there when the point where you made where, he's not going to concede easily. He's a fighter, and we've seen over his presidency that he's not going to go down easy on, on his issues that he's tackled, and he wants to continue to fight for the American people, and he's going to continue to do it until the very end. And yeah, he's going to continue to, pound the table about voter fraud and things like that. And I think it's going to be a story all the way to the end on Inauguration Day if somehow, it did get overturned, or if it's if it's Vice President Biden up there getting sworn into the presidency. And you're right, and you're absolutely right when you also said that if Hillary Clinton was in office, or anyone else in particular too, that there would not be a good rating for after COVID-19 hit. And it's been a challenge for everybody. So that you have to kind of take a step back too and realize that it is a pandemic, and it's a lot goes into trying, taking care of it and preventing it, and it would be hard for anybody to try and tackle this.
Exactly. And I mean, it's just, I feel like everyone, not everyone, but like calling the race before it even started, calling the election before it even started, like, I feel like that was a sign that he was probably not going to win. I mean, granted, no one could have known because the election results didn't happen yet, but when you have a candidate already talking about whether or not they're going to concede before we even got to election day.
No, yeah, you're right. Is there, kind of jumping the gun could definitely come back and hurt you in not just the election, but in anything else really, if you're being overconfident.
And I know a lot of people are talking about if Trump's going to run in 2024. I think he might try. I think he might go to the primary, but I strongly doubt he'll get the nomination, because he would have to he lost endorsements. Like, for example, Mitt Romney in Utah was never really endorsing Trump. I mean, he didn't endorse Joe Biden, but he was never really favorable. You got another presidential candidate like who lost Mitt Romney, and he's just like not really supporting Donald Trump at all. And he you got John McCain, who was another person that didn't really support him. I mean, George Bush didn't even or former the last Republican president before Donald Trump did not openly like come out and fully endorse Donald Trump. And then not only that, he actually released a statement congratulating Joe Biden. Like Trump's favorability with the Republican Party, I feel like has diminished, and we're seeing that, especially at the DNC, when you see Republican politicians actually speak in favor of Joe Biden, like actually crossing those party lines. And I feel like that's what made Joe Biden such a like, I think that's what made him win this election, is because he wasn't just like, you can argue about if he's very liberal or whatever, but the thing is, he appealed to Republican politicians. That is something that Trump has appealed to his Republican base, but you don't really see Democrats, major Democratic figures voting for Donald Trump, but you do see major Republican figures voting for Joe Biden or not supporting Trump.
Yeah, we saw that with Mitt Romney was obviously not the biggest, not Trump's biggest supporter. Yeah, right. President Bush congratulated Joe Biden. We saw John Kasich, who ran for the Republican candidate for president, turn over and speak in favor of Joe Biden. So yes, there has been some people who have left the support of supporting the Republican president and going to supporting the Democrats, but yeah, there has been a few rumors. I've seen a few things on if Trump would run again in 2024, and personally, I wouldn't rule it out. I think that he would see it as his job is not finished, and he would then obviously see it too as coming back and fixing everything that Biden undone. That's because that was one of the points that he ran on his campaign. Biden's going to do this, this, and this. And you're going to lose this, this, and this. So he,
And it's gonna be hard. Oh, not I wasn't trying to cut you off. Go ahead.
yeah, just to finish what I, let's finish the thought here real quick. So like he's, Biden would do this, this, and this. Trump would undo this. Trump would, reenact. Like, right, if Biden wanted to get rid of his tax cuts, well, then Trump can see it as a possibility to come back in and get those back on track. So I think there could be some motivation from his side to come back and go in 2024. But, what are your thoughts on that? And what are your thoughts on, what do you think, quick thought on what do you think we could see in a Joe Biden administration?
Okay, so well, commenting on Trump running again, the thing is that presumably by 2024, the pandemic will we would have already had a vaccine, and presumably the pandemic would be over. I'm not saying that's guaranteed because I mean the pandemic was supposed to only last 2 weeks and was supposed to end in August, and now we're talking about not really ending to maybe like July or maybe not fully being over till 2022. But when the vaccine, people are slating the vaccine to come out in early 2021 and then be readily available by mid 2021, it's going to be really hard for Trump to argue that Joe Biden was a like an incompetent unable president if the pandemic goes under control, which it looks like it might. I mean, I think it will. I'm trying to be optimistic because I'm just trying to have this pandemic be over with. But under the idea, I'm not saying it's concrete, but presumably if the pandemic gets under control during Joe Biden's presidency, I feel like that's definitely going to land him a second term. And even if Trump was to somehow get the Republican nominee, I do not think he would be able to win against a president that essentially took over his job and did what he couldn't do, or do what the American people thought he was incompetent enough to do. Under a Joe Biden administration, I predict that the first thing he's going to do is COVID-19 related, try to get more tests out there. I mean, personally, I would think that a vaccine is more important than getting the test because you can test someone and see that they're positive. But what does that matter if you don't have a vaccine or a treatment to help them, you know? Like getting tests essentially would drive up the numbers, of course, because once tests are more readily available, more and more people are going to be diagnosed. Not saying that that shouldn't be taken into account, but what I'm saying is that there should be more emphasis on finding that vaccine rather than trying to get a bunch of people tested. I mean, getting tested is important because that'll help sort of slow the spread so people will know to self-quarantine. But getting that vaccine is going to be more important. And I think that we're going to see that at some point. Vaccines take a lot of time, as we've been seeing. You can't just snap your fingers and make it happen. Vaccines take, I got to go through a lot of trials and tests and everything. And I know Trump was touting a 90% effectiveness, which let's do some math, some basic math, right? Let's say this is 90% effective and you got 1 million people that have coronavirus, right? And so it's 90% effective. That means there's still going to be 100,000 people out of that million that could still have a possibility of having it and then could spread it. You see, we need a vaccine that is very, very effective. And we don't know if, I mean, I don't know if anybody knows if this thing is mutated, how, like, I mean, a lot of things about the coronavirus is that it's so unknown, but I'm hopeful that we'll get a vaccine under the Biden administration because the vaccine has been worked on like since this pandemic started. And then once the vaccine comes out, then, I mean, during his administration, during the first beginning, we're going to see COVID-19. That's going to be the number one thing. And then we might see some push towards health care, like sort of Affordable Care Act or the Obamacare type, trying to get that reinstated so that way more people can get access to that health care sort of thing. And then we'll see where it goes from there. I think that it. Biden has a lot to prove in terms of similar to 2016, Trump came in with a very divided America. And Biden is getting the exact same thing because literally I believe the Electoral College numbers are flipped. Like Biden now has similar to Trump's victory in 2016, which still is like Biden had won, but he did not win by a lot. It was still very close in a lot of key states. And so Joe Biden really has to drive home that point he's been talking about I'm not a Democratic president or a Republican president. I'm a president for the American people. That's what we're mainly going to see. So I don't think we're going to see any overarching sweeping legislation like a Bernie Sanders healthcare and education for all. I don't think we're going to see that immediately. We might take steps towards that. Like he might try and reinstate Obamacare to try to deal with the whole healthcare for all type thing. But I do not think we're going to see anything big and major shifts in this first term because you got to wait for the dust to settle. Really focus on COVID-19. Once COVID-19 gets under control, then we'll see some legislation. Maybe we might see some police reform. That's definitely going to be something that is going to be pressuring him a lot because a lot of people, from my perspective, living in a very liberal area like Chicago, a lot of people are hoping on him doing some sort of legislation like that, especially because you see all the Black Lives Matter protests and everything. He's going to have that pressure on him to do something in regards to police reform. And so I think we might see that a year from now, about, because I think that if the timeline is what they say it is, which this is presumably if the timeline is what the doctors of the White House is saying right now, because I mean we don't know what if it's going to change because everything is tended to change because like this is supposed to be over in August, but it's not. But I would think that coronavirus would be starting to die down if a vaccine comes out by maybe December of next year, so right around this time, and then we might see some legislation towards the police aspect pushed by his administration. But The main thing that I feel like people needed to pay attention to is, honest to goodnessly, the House and the Senate elections, which now is the main time where you see people shining a light on the House and the Senate because it's a presidential election year. But what people got to realize is that these elections happen every 2 years. So there's an election in 2022 that is going to be very pivotal. It's very pivotal in the Biden administration because you're going to see if the Senate has a possibility to flip towards Democrats as well, because that could happen in 2022. And I really think that that should have been a point that people focused on, because I get the mainstream media likes to focus on Donald Trump and everything because he's the president and everyone likes to focus on him and they think he's the most powerful figure. Being a political science student, one of the first thing I learned in my American government class is that the president is not the most impactful figure. He might be the most popularized figure. He might be the figure that a lot of people look up to. But realistically, the House and the Senate, not only do they check the president, they have a lot more power than him. Like the president can sign a law. Like a president doesn't necessarily need to sign legislation for it to go into effect. If the House and the Senate pass it, the president doesn't need to sign it. It'll automatically go into effect by itself. But if the president wants, if it's some good piece of legislation, then you see the president sign it. So it'd be like, look at what I did. Even though realistically it was the work of the House and the Senate, the president just gets to kind of just sign it and like take credit for
Right, you can
it.
only do so much with an executive order.
Only so much. And a lot of that is dependent on the favorability of the president in the eyes of the House and the Senate. Like, for example, DACA was done through an executive order through the Obama administration, which overstepped his boundaries because it had to deal with the immigration and other things like that. I'm not saying DACA is bad at all. I have friends and family that rely on that. But my thing is that it was able to be done because he was, I feel like, a lot more favorable of a president compared to Donald Trump. So I mean, now we see that kind of shift, and now Trump was trying to roll back those regulations, and because it was done through an executive order. And the thing is that people are nervous about that. I don't think a lot of people realize is that because it was done through an executive order, it does not have as much security as it would if it was passed through the House and the Senate. And so I think Biden is really going to have to try to get those protections through the House and the Senate, and that will increase his favorability. Number one, and number two, that will kind of help alleviate that one issue of whether or not the DACA has a possibility of getting overturned.
Right. I'm glad that you brought up the House and the Senate, because that was, a main thing that I watched too on election night, even for the state representatives that I voted for that are representing, our areas. That's even more important because it's more local to us. So the House is still going to be Democratic, even though the Republicans did pick up a lot of seats there, so they did close that gap. Looking at the Senate, we're still not sure because we have the Georgia runoffs in January. So, question for you, Tony: if the Senate stays Republican, could the first 2 years of a Biden administration be, a lame duck presidency? Could not a lot get done?
I feel that a lot of people think that the party lines define whether or not legislation can get through, which they can to a certain extent, but Republicans and Democrats have to work together to get things passed. Like having a majority, like that doesn't guarantee, like specifically with the House, when you have hundreds of representatives, when you have a majority, that doesn't necessarily mean that every single one of your voters, every single one of those representatives are going to vote with you. That's not guaranteed. So I think that Biden would need to try to appeal to Republicans, which I think he's been doing a good job at that, seeing as how he was able to flip a state like Arizona, which I don't believe Obama didn't even flip Arizona, and he was able to flip that. I feel like excuse me, you can edit that out, I assume, my fault. But Biden was able to appeal to a lot of Republicans. So I think that he is going to be a president that actually tries to break those party lines. He already has to have Republican figures, like I said earlier, speak at the Democratic convention. I feel like trying to appeal to Republicans in the Senate, I think that's doable. And I think even if Biden is not able to convince, like let's say Biden isn't able to convince a majority of the Senate, I mean that the House is already a Democratic majority, so I mean it would put pressure on the Senate. If the Senate is all eyes are going to be on the Senate, like the Senate now has a lot of eyes on it, right? So if the Senate was to try to hinder Biden's administration, I think that would be to a certain extent a detriment, because I mean the Senate does have elections in 2022. So, and a lot of when a lot of people's eyes, like midterm elections have not historically had as much precedence and as much like attention and coverage as the presidential election. So now that it has a lot of attention towards it, because it is going to be so impactful, because it has a possibility of going either way, and even if it stays Republican majority, people are still going to be paying attention to it. I feel like the Senate is going to, it may not be like the easy, just Biden could just get things done in 2 seconds type thing. But I think a lot of people might be surprised by seeing some things actually being done by a Republican majority Senate.
No, it is going to be interesting to watch if he is able to get some bipartisan legislation through, just because there is going to be, a fiery side to Republicans, I'd say. If the election results don't get overturned in the favor that they are supporting President Trump with his fight, so it will be very interesting to see in that aspect. Like you said, just because you're red or blue, it doesn't necessarily mean that it's always going to be a red and blue vote. We could see some people flip over, in pertaining to their point of view. Do they think this is right? Do they think this is wrong? So yes, like I said, you can only do so much with an executive order. So it is going to be interesting to see what gets passed. Especially, I think, a stimulus plan is going to be at the top of everything. Looking at Obamacare, there's going to be a lot of
Most
police
definitely.
reform. So you have like you got three big bullet points right there that's going to be on Biden's desk at day one. One last question for you, Tony, to wrap up our conversation. I again appreciate you coming on. I think we've touched on a lot of good things. I was talking with somebody the other day, and I brought this up, and I think it's a realistic point. So you still have Trump in the office, obviously. He's going to be in there until inauguration day. And now you have Joe Biden launched his Biden-Harris transition team. Obviously, COVID-19 is still the biggest thing we have going for us. And so, every day, whether it's, the press secretary or the, COVID task force with Vice President Pence, you also have Joe Biden and Kamala Harris talking with their team on COVID-19. So the question for you is, do you think Joe Biden and Kamala Harris's transition team with their COVID team is undermining President Trump and his team?
Absolutely. I mean, Joe Biden's a huge reason why Joe Biden has won is because a lot more people believe that is more capable to deal with COVID-19 than President Trump. And so I think his whole, I mean, everyone's going to be looking at him because a lot of people voted for him and are trusting the fact that he's going to get this under control. And I mean, his entire campaign, he's been about, I mean, Kamala literally said, I don't remember the quote exactly, was that if a vaccine was approved under the Trump campaign, she's not going to take it. Like, I mean, they're doing everything they can to undermine what President Trump has done. And now they can say whatever they want about how bad President Trump handled COVID-19. But now, the fact that they're getting ready to get inaugurated, now it's like, okay, here's your chance to do something. What do you do? And like, that's what this election really proved, was that American people are paying attention. Like, there was a low voter turnout in 2016, but like, there was a high voter turnout right now. I mean, people are paying attention to these issues because they matter. And like, a lot of people, assumably, did not feel that Donald Trump was capable enough to deal with the pandemic, which is why, I mean, from my standpoint, I believe is a huge reason why he lost. And so, when you see a president that is not openly advertising wearing masks compared to someone who doesn't really have these huge rallies and is encouraging people to wear masks, because like literally at the Trump protest, I believe there was a few days ago, I was looking at videos and I hardly saw any masks. And like, when you see those two candidates, it's like Biden is saying, okay, I'm going to get this under control. Trump hasn't done anything. And Trump's trying to say Biden would make everything worse, when in reality, under Trump's administration, we've seen huge amounts of deaths of coronavirus. And I'm not going to blame those all on President Trump, because I mean, this is a huge pandemic. And not only that, there are a lot of other people that need to be held accountable, a lot of other offices, and like I said, in the House and the Senate, that need to be held accountable. But that's another issue. But I really think that the Biden administration, I mean, I have hope. I mean, I've just been having hope overall. Like, I didn't care. Like, whoever won, I really just hope this would go away. But I'm more hopeful under a Joe Biden administration compared to a Donald Trump administration. I mean, and that's mainly because, like, Joe Biden has been handling this, how to approach this specifically in the election wise and election ways. He's been approaching this white way, seeing as how not only did he just win, but I mean, he was able to turn out huge numbers. Like, we're seeing he has the most votes of any president in election history, and Donald Trump's easily right there, number two. And I really think Joe Biden has an obligation to get the pandemic under the control. Even if Donald Trump won, he would still be under that same obligation. But I feel like Joe Biden now is under that obligation even more, because you're looking at incumbent president being defeated, which is not all that common. I mean, what do you got? Like, I call like John Adams, and then you got the first George Bush, George H.W. Bush, and then you got what, Jimmy Carter? Like, they're not very common. And so to see that Joe Biden has a lot of pressure on him to deliver with this COVID-19 relief and all that stuff. And so he's been saying how in his campaign how he could get things under control, and Donald Trump hasn't been doing everything. And like, literally at the debates, you always see him going up to the camera and being like, a lot of you across this country are going to have an empty seat at the table, and trying to pin that on Trump. Now that he has successfully beat Donald Trump, now it's about doing what he said he was going to do, and everyone's going to be watching. And I think that he's going to succeed mainly because he has no other option. If he does not get COVID-19 under control, not only is it going to look bad for his reelection, it's going to reflect bad on the Democratic Party as a whole. And so I feel like he has no option. He has to get the pandemic under control. And I think he will. It'll take a second. I'm not saying this thing is going to go away instantly, of course, because I mean, COVID-19 has proved it can't just go away, but I think it's going to get under control at some point under the Biden administration, and that's going to help him a lot, because once he gets the pandemic under control, regardless of who runs in 2024, even if Trump gets the nomination 2024, it's not going to matter, because Joe Biden's going to be seen as the president that got us out of that pandemic, and Donald Trump's going to be viewed as the president that could not get us out of a pandemic.
My point of view on it is, Tony, is that you're giving mixed messages to the American people. So you'll have Vice President Pence with the task force saying one thing, and now you have, Vice President Biden's transition team saying another thing. Do you see that? Do you think that that's a problem, that there's these mixed messages, and then Americans right now don't know who to look to?
I feel like that's a huge part of it. Because I mean, you have like the American people are raised and told to look up to the president, and then when you look up to the president, and the president himself caught COVID-19, it's like, what? Like you would think if there's one person on this earth that would probably not catch it, is probably the president of the United States. But I mean, he got it, and I mean, I feel like a lot of people weren't really that surprised about it because he's not preaching about wearing these masks, and there's a lot of miscommunication between him and the rest of his administration. I mean, that was a huge detriment because it's like, okay, am I supposed to wear a mask? Okay, if I don't have to wear a mask, I can go outside. Wait, but if I go outside, look at the COVID-19 numbers surging. It's like a lot of the things he was saying, he could have, Donald Trump could have won this election if he simply talked about wearing masks, simply just saying that. He would have done a lot better. But when you see an administration that is so back and forth, I mean, it's going to be he really did not approach this the right way, especially when you have an election on coming up. Like you really have to make sure that everything is clear. If you say something, got to make sure your whole administration agrees with that same thing and says the same thing. And I mean that sort of misinformation and hearing a lot of other people, it definitely I feel like as a lot of American people, like I've seen a lot of my friends were like, I don't know who to vote for, both people look incompetent or whatever. But I mean, I feel like Joe Biden was really able to be that candidate that instilled kind of like more hope than Donald Trump. I mean, especially because if you pay attention to the debates, which I mean, granted they weren't like a lot, they're infamous. A lot of people didn't like them, but Joe Biden had always had it, made it a point to try to look at the camera, try to talk to the American people. And in the second debate, he did like the similar things to the first, trying to make sure he's looking at the people. And every time you see him do a speech, he's trying to connect to those emotions that people are having right now because it's a very emotional time, trying to connect with to those people. And I feel like that's why Joe Biden was able to win, because a lot of people that were confused that didn't know who to trust, Joe Biden was able to be like, hey, look, I understand your pain. I mean, but specifically when you have a person like a presidential candidate that has lost a previous wife and a kid, he really has been someone who is able to understand. Not saying Trump hasn't experienced loss in his life, but what I'm saying is when Biden is able to sort of appeal to that emotional basis more, that is why he won, and that is why he. I feel like that's sort of the answer to that question about what do people do when they don't know who to trust. I feel like a lot of people decided to vote for Joe Biden because they may not they may they're hearing mixed messages, but Joe Biden is trying to signal hope and trying to signal change when you see an administration that has been all over the place.
Yeah, there definitely is that like emotional factor, that relatable factor that, politicians or, anybody in, in a sort of office or even, family and friends. There is that factor that you can relate to with somebody like that. Yeah, I think the biggest takeaway out of this conversation, Tony, is that there's going to be a lot of things on Biden's desk his first day in office. And COVID-19 is not going away. People are still wanting a stimulus package passed. There's police reform to be done. There's, the talk of Obamacare, DACA, the Second Amendment, with guns and gun control. There's going to be a lot of things that Joe Biden is going to have to take care of. And I agree when you said that I think COVID-19 will ultimately be the be all end all of his presidency. If it does last longer than, say, next summer, you hope that the vaccine can get some of the numbers under control, but we just don't know. So we don't know how long it could last into his presidency. And say it's gone in a year into his presidency, there's still 3 more years to, get done what he wants to get done, but it could be, the be all end all stamp of his presidency, depending on how long it lasts.
1,000,000%.
I think that about wraps up the first episode here. Again, we had Tony Sandifer on, political science major at Dominican University. Again, Tony, Thank you so much for coming on. I had a great conversation with you.
No problem, no problem. I mean, politics is literally what I'm getting ready to spend the next 4 years, well, 2.5 years of my life studying, and maybe even more when I go for a master's.
I'm a journalism major myself. I'm a big sports nut. You know, my goal is to be a sports writer in some capacity, but
so you're going to give me free Super Bowl tickets?
I'll write your name down, Tony. I won't forget about it.
Gotcha.
But, yeah, sports has been my main focus, but I have taken a bigger focus into politics. I've cared much more about it since, obviously, I was able to vote. And then especially going into college, you know, continuing through college, seeing all the issues come up, seeing how important it is, and, you know, how enjoyable it is too. If, you know, the candidate that you supports win, and then you can see, you know, you can see the benefits and all the promises come true.
Exactly.
Again, Tony, thanks for coming on. That wraps up the first episode. Thank you.